Death is just a beginning. Part 3. Yusuf slumped under the small cot in the room he had rented, burying his head in his hands. His father would be ashamed if he had seen his son dragging another man by a chain to a slave auction block, even if that man was a djinn. Slaves were the one merchandise his father had refused to touch. He would not allow a slave on board their ship, not even with paid passage alongside their master. "It is wrong for any man to own another," he would say to Yusuf and his older brother. He would be incensed when he came across a slave market, or when he saw men and women dragged along in chains, especially those sold to brothels or to the galleys, where they would be treated poorly and rarely see the light of day, never allowed a chance to earn their way out of slavery, as decreed by their holy book. Yusuf had tried to convince himself that Nicola was no man, and the chain and collar were necessary to prevent the Genoese djinn from killing him in his sleep again. Yet how could he justify dragging him through the streets to a slave market with the intention of receiving coin for another man's freedom? He was going to sell him into slavery, knowing what Niccolo's own people had already done to him when they discovered he did not die and healed miraculously. Niccolo had told him he did not feel like a Shaitan or Malek, and this was no different to how Yusuf felt about his own ability to heal quickly and his inability to stay dead. If Yusuf had sold him, then what would have happened to Niccolo once his new master discovered his secret? Would he allow others to torture and abuse him, knowing he would heal or return to life from whatever sadistic acts they performed upon his body? And, Yusuf thought, if that could happen to Niccolo, then what could stop it from happening to him also? They needed each other if they were to stay out of the hands of people like the Christians who had already tortured Niccolo. Perhaps this was the reason Yusuf could not ransom Niccolo back to his pope. And shame aside, perhaps it was the reason why he could not go through with it earlier. Yusuf walked back to the market square and picked up ample supplies for two men, including fresh clothing for Niccolo, before returning to the inn. He ordered two bowls of a mildly spiced lamb stew with flatbread, asking the innkeeper to bring it out to the stables when it was ready. Taking a deep breath, Yusuf went into the stables and loaded bags onto the two horses before sitting down just beyond Niccolo's reach. "I will speak simply, as I need you to understand my words. Yes? You understand?" Niccolo nodded slowly. "Good. I have every reason to hate you. You came here to kill. You did kill my friend." The only sign of any remorse was the slightest dip of his eyes downwards for just a moment. Niccolo stared back at Yusuf with those almost luminous pale eyes that were so unsettling and yet so beautiful. His bowed lips were pressed together as if deliberately holding himself back for speaking. Yusuf drew out his dagger and saw Niccolo's eyes dart straight to it, bony shoulders curling as if readying for an attack. "This," Yusuf said as he sliced across his own palm and showed it to Niccolo so he could see the blood well and drip before the clean edges of the wound closed without a trace of a scar. "This is a gift and a curse to both of us. You know the darkness inside of men, the bad. You have seen the bad, yes? Felt it. How they can hurt us over and over for their pleasure. For their god." This time Niccolo did look away, lips parting in ragged breaths, a tremble going through his too thin frame, and that made Yusuf feel even more ashamed of what he had been prepared to do to this man. Yusuf wiped the blood off his hand, pausing at the sound of steps approaching. The innkeeper's daughter appeared, and Yusuf indicated for her to place the food, cups, and jug of freshly drawn water on the ground between him and Niccolo. She glanced curiously between them before leaving, and Yusuf waited until he was certain she had returned to the inn before he reached over and offered one bowl and half of the bread to Niccolo. Yusuf could see the hunger in his eyes, the way he bit lightly into his lower lip as he looked at the offered food. Eventually, hunger outweighed any fear or pride on his part, and he took the food in trembling hands, eating almost delicately once more, where most starving men would have tried to shovel the food into their mouths. It confirmed Yusuf's belief that hunger was something this jinn had learned over many years, rather than since he arrived in these lands. They ate in silence, watching each other carefully. Yusuf finished his meal and waited patiently while Niccolo slowly chewed each mouthful as if it might be his last. When he put down the empty bowl sometime later, Yusuf threw him the key to the slave collar without a word, watching as Niccolo straightened in surprise. Niccolo fumbled the key into the lock, twisted and released the collar, letting it drop onto the straw beside him. "There are two horses." Yusuf pointed to one of the horses. "The dark one is yours. It is packed with food and water, with fresh clothes and a hooded cloak for traveling and for keeping you warm at night." Niccolo glanced at the darker of the two horses. He had watched as Yusuf loaded packs onto the horses earlier, but still he looked back at Yusuf in confusion. "You can ride off alone. Find your way home if that is what you want to do. I will even point out the right direction so you do not get lost this time," Yusuf added with a hint of a smile. He took a deep breath. "Or we can ride together. Protect each other. Safety in numbers." Yusuf shrugged. "I have killed you many times, but now I give you my word. I will not kill you again without good reason." "Why do I trust you?" Niccolo spoke finally in his broken Greek. "There is nothing I can say to make you trust me. And there is nothing you can say to make me trust you. Only time can do that." Niccolo snorted softly. "If we cannot die, then time is what we have." Yusuf gave a wry smile of agreement and stood up. "I plan to leave here after Fajr, dawn prayers. If you are still here, then I will have your answer, and we will ride together." With this, he walked back to the room he had rented within the inn, leaving Niccolo to his bed of straw. Considering the pain they had inflicted upon each other since they first met, Yusuf was surprised how much his thought of never seeing Niccolo again filled him with both sorrow and regret. But he had to give Niccolo a choice to stay or go. He dreamed again that night of Niccolo being tortured and beaten, seeing those sea-green, stormy eyes hollowed out in pain, staring up at him in fear and accusation. Yusuf awoke with his heart beating too fast and his breathing ragged. It took a little time to get his breathing back under control, but eventually he laid back down, and this time he slept deeply, dreamless, awaking well past sunrise. Yusuf cursed when he realized half the morning had gone, yet feeling only a pang of guilt for missing Fajr, and only because he had told Niccolo he would come to the stables just after dawn prayers. It didn't take him long to gather up his few possessions and pay the innkeeper what was owed before heading to the small stable. Yusuf froze on the threshold, shoulders slumping when he saw only one horse. Niccolo had gone. "What were you expecting?" he murmured to himself. "You killed him many times and let him die many more. You chained him up like a dog and almost sold him into slavery." If he had been in Niccolo's position, then he would have mounted up and ridden out as soon as he thought it safe to leave unnoticed. Perhaps it was the sound of the horse leaving that had brought him out of his sleep in the early hours of that morning. Yusuf loaded the rest of his belongings onto the remaining horse and mounted up, clicking to get his horse moving. Alone, he had two choices. He could go south, heading back to the Maghreb to see if he could return to his family. Perhaps help his older brother run the family business, or find work as a scribe or artist. Or he could ride north to see if the two women of his dreams truly existed, and if so, if they had answers for him. Of course, he had a third choice. He could go after the Genoese jinn, after Niccolo, hunt him down, and, And what? Yusuf spoke aloud. He couldn't kill him, and he no longer wanted to hold him captive. Wanting to believe the djinn would not go back to killing Yusuf's people, now his own had treated him with such cruelty. Niccolo had kind, almost serene eyes when he wasn't enraged or fearful. Strange, yes. Like many of the Franks who came to his lands to slaughter his people. But kind. And Yusuf had always prided himself on his judge of character, at least when his mind was not clouded by rage and war. When he reached the edge of town, he made his decision to head north. He had a strong feeling. The two determined women of his dreams were heading straight for him. He felt it in his bones, and he would rather meet them on his own terms and not put his family at risk should they prove as formidable as they looked. At first, the road was busy with farmers, merchants, and other travelers going to and from the busy town. He felt a pang of guilt and regret as he watched a line of chained souls following a slow-moving wagon, knowing they were headed for the slave market. He wondered if Niccolo had looked as tired and defeated when Yusuf dragged him into the town behind his horse, and the guilt rode higher as he recalled how many times Niccolo had stumbled and fallen to his knees, dragged several feet before Yusuf noticed and allowed him the chance to regain his feet. Eventually, the road grew quieter, and Yusuf knew he would need to leave the road soon to look for somewhere to camp for the night. He frowned when he noticed someone seated on a large rock on the road far ahead of him, a cloak pulled over his body and head. As he approached carefully, wondering if it was a trap where he would be beset by bandits, the man pulled back the hood. "Niccolo!" Yusuf exclaimed, thinking the worst, that Niccolo had been attacked. Until he heard a horse and saw the one he had given Niccolo grazing on the thorny shrubland just a little way off, tied to the barren branches of a tree. "I go home." "Then you are going in the right direction if you plan to ride or walk the entire way," Yusuf interrupted. "But a boat would be quicker." Niccolo huffed at the interruption and repeated, "I go home, but there no place for me." "Ah." Yusuf recalled Niccolo saying he had no family to pay a ransom. But perhaps he meant he had no family at all, only the church. He dismounted and led his horse to the side of the road, sitting down a few feet away from Niccolo. "But what about your church? Are you not a priest?" "No more. I am not clean." "Ah, they think you are a shaitan, a jinn." Yusuf saw confusion on his face. "A demon. See, demon." Yusuf shrugged. "I still believe they could be wrong. You could be a malak, an angel." Niccolo huffed, rolling his stormy eyes and looking away, his perfectly shaped lips raised slightly at the edges in a thin smile. "Are you?" Yusuf added softly in Arabic, "You look like an angel." Niccolo frowned, not understanding Arabic. He sighed heavily. "I think," he touched his head, "us together. I wait here. I hope for you come here." "What if I had gone home? Gone south to Maria? You would be waiting a long time." Niccolo shrugged, and Yusuf was not sure if he understood. Instead, Niccolo carried on in his soft, lilting voice, heavy with a foreign accent. "I dream of two women. Fire in eyes. Blood on swords. Angry. They are coming." Yusuf straightened in shock and looked at Niccolo intently. "I too have dreamed of these two women, fierce warriors riding from the north." He glanced toward the road ahead that led first to Nazareth and then onward to Aleppo and beyond. "I would prefer to meet them far away from my home and my family, in case they have ill intent." He wasn't certain if Niccolo understood everything he said. He moved his hand back and forth between the two of them. "Perhaps we should meet them together." "Together," Niccolo copied his hand motion, smiling when Yusuf nodded. Niccolò pushed up from his rock, moving to his horse as if preparing to ride on. "Wait," Yusuf called and pointed towards the sun once he had Niccolò's attention. It was already low in the sky. "We should make camp for the night. Ride on tomorrow." Niccolò looked up at the sky and nodded, leading his horse further from the road, beyond a small outcrop of rocks that afforded greater protection both from the elements and from attack. He tied up his horse once more and then began to wander around, gathering up anything that could be used as kindling. Yusuf watched him for a moment before tying his horse next to Niccolò's. He unloaded what he would need for the night, watching Niccolò do the same after he had dropped the kindling into a pile. Between them, they built a small campfire and sat on opposite sides, just like before, eyeing each other carefully. But this time Yusuf had no intention of harming this man. "I gave you my word. I will not kill you again, not unless you give me good reason." "And I kill you not in sleep," his lips twitched, "or slave you. I give my word." Yusuf laughed at Niccolò's dry words, his teasing eyes, and the wry twist of his mouth. "That's very good to hear, for it would be a shame if our newfound alliance should end so quickly in bloodshed and misery." Yusuf could see it was almost dusk, so he unrolled his prayer mat before beginning the ritual cleansing of his hands, face, and feet, waiting for the right moment to begin the Maghrib prayer. He ignored his audience of one, focusing his attention on his prayers and letting all other thoughts clear from his mind. When he finished, he noticed Niccolò was on his knees, head bowed, eyes closed, and hands clasped in front of him, murmuring words in the language of his own people. He finished by making the sign of a cross over his body from head to heart, from left to right, before bringing his fingers to his lips. Yusuf had seen this many times from Christians, though many held a small cross in this devotion. They ate once Yusuf had observed Eshat, sunset, sitting opposite each other with the small campfire as the only barrier between them. It was no different to the last time, and yet Yusuf knew so much had changed since then. Aware he had been the one to cause pain last time, Yusuf decided he would be the first to lie down and try to sleep. He curled up on his side beneath his cloak, using it as a blanket, and closed his eyes. Yet sleep was elusive. All his instincts were on the man close by, listening to each rustle of cloth or scuff of dirt, to each sigh, as Niccolò settled on the ground opposite him. He sneaked open one eye to check on Niccolò, seeing him wrapped in his cloak, eyes closed. Yusuf listened closely as Niccolò's breathing became deeper, his own breaths falling in sync, eyes feeling heavy. Finally, he slept. Niccolò awoke at first light, feeling more rested than he had in years, despite the strange company in a still strange land. He glanced across and noticed Yusuf was still asleep, wondering if he ought to wake him, as he knew Yusuf's people also prayed at dawn. It struck him then that he no longer had to follow the rules of the priesthood and keep the hours, the seven sets of prayers, throughout each day. Niccolò was no longer a priest. He was excommunicated until a papal exorcism could expel the demon from him, and yet he felt no different to the man he had been before setting out from Genoa. As a demon, he should not have been able to enter a holy place or allow the touch of a sanctified cross upon his flesh. He should not be able to utter Christ's name or pray to God without his tongue burning. And yet he had offered up prayers and spoke his Lord's name without agony or terror. By rights, he had ceased to be a priest as soon as he took up the sword, but the church had been willing to overlook such things on his return from what they deemed a holy quest, protecting the faith. He had seen other priests on the battlefield who had allowed themselves only a club for protection, preferring to spend all their time performing mass, taking confession, or in prayer for the sick and dying. None of these priests entered the battlefield except in the aftermath, to walk among the dead and dying, to give the last rites. If he had not believed his sins so great, then Niccolò would have counted himself among those priests. But instead, he had sought salvation in battle, desperately. When his first death outside of the walls of Jerusalem did not give him the promise of heaven, Niccolò began questioning his motives. All his life, he had been taught to hate Yusuf's people. His father had denounced them as evil for the crimes against Genoa, for the fleets of pirate vessels that made widows of Genoese merchants and sailors, for the tax on Genoa by the Fatimid fleet over 100 years earlier that destroyed most of the port. They were seen as mortal enemies. The church had denounced Yusuf's people as heathens, pagans, worshiping a false god and a false prophet. It had answered the calls from the Christians being persecuted in the Holy Lands and had made high promises for all who would take up the sword in the name of God. A noble cause. But if his heart had been pure and his soul free from the perceived sin of perverted lust, then he would have gone without a need for higher promises. He would have gone simply for the glory of God. As he prayed in the Holy Sepulchre, before Francesco denounced him as a demon, he had begun to suspect his motives were impure. And as he hung from the pillar, with his flesh flayed from his back, he found a clarity of thought previously denied to him. He realized he had come to these lands for selfish reasons. He had come to allow another to kill him, so he could be forgiven by God for something that wasn't even forbidden or considered perverted by the church, just by his father. Except wasn't that just suicide by another man's hand? All his years as an acolyte and then a priest had taught him that one's life is the property of God, and to destroy that life is an affront to God. Coming to these lands, he had simply exchanged a perceived sin brought on by his father's beatings for the mortal sin of seeking a way to end the life God had granted to him. No wonder he had been denied a place in heaven. Yet he had also been denied a place in hell, so God must have some higher purpose for him. Perhaps it was not by chance, but destiny that brought him to Yusuf on the battlefield. He was confused and still scared of what he had become. And perhaps Yusuf was as well, with each of them using their anger and hatred as a shield. Yet, perhaps God had never intended them to remain mortal enemies, expecting them to follow the teachings of Christ and turn the other cheek. If Yusuf had been a crazed and sadistic man, then turning the other cheek would not have fared Niccolò well. But even after all Niccolò had done to Yusuf, he had been met with kindness. Perhaps begrudging at first, but kindness, nonetheless. More than he had found with his Christian brothers. Yusuf had been the stronger of them for showing him mercy when Niccolò had deserved none. He was brought out of his thoughts by movement opposite, smiling at the almost childlike way Yusuf rubbed at his eyes sleepily as he sat up. "Is it dawn already?" he grumbled, rising to wash before rolling out his prayer mat. When Yusuf finished his prayers and noticed Niccolò had not even started on his, Niccolò felt guilty and looked away. He had spent so many hours on his knees praying to God in Jerusalem, pleading with him to show him a sign, to tell him what he should do to earn God's forgiveness. And God had sent Brother Francesco. Yet had he not also sent Yusuf to find him on the road to endless torture, to free him? With a sigh, Niccolò sank to his knees.
Pater noster, qui es in caelis, sanctificetur nomen tuum.
The familiar words flowed, finally finishing with Amen. He made the sign of the cross before rising, catching a tiny smile on Yusuf's face. By the middle of the third day on the road together, with Nazareth just a short distance away, Yusuf stopped. Niccolò was used to this by now, almost admiring Yusuf for keeping his face so strong, where Niccolò had started to have doubts. Not in God, but most certainly in the church. Old habits died hard, though, and he took the opportunity to offer up his own prayers in silence, where Yusuf spoke his clearly. Once they had finished, they shared a meal in the shade while they waited for the hottest part of the day to pass. "I have some... you," Yusuf said, rising to his feet and going to his horse. Niccolo didn't understand all the words, but waited to see what Yusuf was doing. He pulled a long, wrapped object from his horse and handed it to Niccolo. From the length and weight, Niccolo knew it was either a long sword or a broad sword, but until he pulled away the covering, he never suspected. It was Matteo's sword. His sword. He stared at it in shock, fingers running over the pommel and along the grip to the crossguard. He blinked back the tears filling his eyes. I think never see it again. Stole while I die. I took it. I thought you were dead. Truly dead, when you were still lying there hours later. Niccolo nodded, feeling no anger at the theft, but only joy in the sword's return. I thought you might need it, if these two women are... Niccolo didn't know the final word, but the way Yusuf tensed his fists was explanation enough. They had not dreamed of the women for the last two nights, but Niccolo still felt a prickle of sensation between his shoulder blades, a sixth sense that told him they were still coming. If they had hostile intent, then he hoped Yusuf would stand beside him, even though they had been mortal enemies only days earlier. What did the old proverb say? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Certainly the driven pace of the women had slowed considerably since he started traveling with Yusuf, without chains. Perhaps they had hoped to find each man alone, a more vulnerable target, and now they were more cautious. Niccolo checked the blade, and in particular the edge, finding it had been cared for since Niccolo last wielded it. 2 years of warfare had left it nicked and pitted from metal striking metal. On the battlefield, he had seen inferior quality swords shatter, leaving their wielder defenseless. But so far, this one had done him well. And for that, he could only thank the generosity and love of his brother. Niccolo rose to his feet and hefted his longsword. Long years as a priest had dulled his skills when he first took up this sword, but over these past 2 years, fighting for his faith, he had practiced his moves as religiously as he had prayed, until they became a part of him once more. Now he let his memory of exercises learned from childhood fill him, following the routines set out by his swordmaster as he cut and parried, stabbed and hewed, using his body to add force enough to crack armor or sever unprotected limbs and heads. He knew where each move could leave him momentarily unprotected, inviting the sword or dagger of his enemy to pierce his flesh. So each move transitioned into another to protect, to maintain distance. He started in high guard, cutting down diagonally in a move that would cleave from neck to hip, circling quickly with the true edge to keep any other attackers surrounding him from reaching his unprotected back. Perfect control, with all the power coming from his body, from his very bones, rather than from muscle alone. Quick, sharp movements, where the sword was in motion and his body simply moved with it. Niccolo faltered as he recalled practicing with Brother Francesco, controlling his movements so he could pull a killing or maiming blow before it landed. He remembered teaching the older man how to keep his elbows in close, his index and thumbs loose on the grip while squeezing with the other fingers, and feet planted firmly, his center of balance lowered by loose knees in a wide stance. High guard, ox guard, wrath guard, and even fool's guard, all depending on the enemy he faced, each chosen in that split moment in time. Every part of the sword used from flat to edge, from point to strong cross guard and pommel. All used without conscious thought, with only one imperative. Kill or be killed. Most fights lasted but a few blows before he was moving on to the next enemy, and he let his subconscious control the sword and hence his body while his mind focused on the immediate danger surrounding him. He could not count the number of Yusuf's people who had fallen before him from a killing or crippling blow. Brother Francesco had once called him a formidable opponent, an avenging Archangel Michael. Niccolo stopped, point driven into dust as he leaned on the sword, lost in thought until he became aware of his audience. He glanced across at Yusuf to see admiration battling with anger on his handsome face, beautiful brown eyes simmering with some other undefinable emotion. When he spoke, his words seemed begrudging. "You are very good with a sword." Niccolo took it as a backhanded compliment, remembering Yusuf's words from days earlier. He had killed his friend. Niccolo was very good at dealing death on the battlefield. He moved back as Yusuf stepped out with his safe in hand, smiling wryly as he watched Yusuf go through a similar set of exercises specific to the curved sword favored by his people. He noticed the fluid movements, the slashing and cutting, the twist of the wrist to flick the sword from one attacking position to another. He was fast, striking like a snake. But Niccolo was already aware of all this, having faced him on the battlefield. He was beautiful. He was poetry in motion. And Niccolo wanted to move with him in this dance of death, so he stepped forward, longsword at ox guard, one leg forward, elbows and knees relaxed, sword held almost above his head, point towards Yusuf's throat. He saw mirth in Yusuf's eyes, acceptance of the challenge, and the fight began with each of them acquitting themselves well, both holding back from any killing blow. Afterwards, Yusuf laughed. "I am still ashamed to not win easily against a bag of bones." That night, Niccolo had good dreams of Matteo, choosing to believe his brother was in good health and far from the madness of this holy war. Perhaps one day he and Yusuf might share stories of their loved ones. Months went by as they continued to head north, leaving Nazareth far behind as they traveled on towards Aleppo, taking their time. They still dreamed of the two women, but they had slowed their pace considerably, too. The nights were colder, and gradually they moved their blankets closer until they were sleeping next to each other back to back, close enough to feel the other's breath on their face if they rolled over in the night. The constant hunger that once gnawed at his belly was gone, and he had started to put flesh onto his bag of bones, much to Yusuf's approval. His language skills had improved too, so they could converse far easier. He had even started to learn Yusuf's dialect of Arabic, though Yusuf picked up Ligurian far quicker. He seemed to have a head for languages, likely because the son of a merchant needed to converse with people of many different races. "Why were you a priest?" "Why does any man take holy orders?" "Ah, I see we are not in the mood to talk today, answering a question with a question," Yusuf smirked. "Or maybe there is a story behind this that shames you." The smirk became a laugh when Niccolo turned away in guilt. "So you ran away to become a priest," he says, voice full of mirth. "Which brings me back to my question. Why did you become a priest?" Niccolo huffed in annoyance and kicked his horse on so they were no longer riding side by side, hoping Yusuf had not seen the shame creeping across him, flushing his cheeks. Aleppo was a lively city, and, although under Muslim rule, its significance for trade between the Mediterranean and the Far East gave it a mix of both their people, so Niccolo and Yusuf did not stick out at all. They made their way to a small inn, paying for a single small room and stabling with the few coins they had earned along the way. "If we can find work, then we could stay here for a while," Yusuf said, and Niccolo agreed. "It would be nice to sleep someplace with a roof over our heads." The weather had started to turn colder with approaching winter. And wetter, too, Niccolo thought, as he recalled the sudden downpour that had soaked them both to the skin only days before. It would likely get worse the further north they went, so they would need to earn more coins to pay for warmer clothing and provisions before they left this city. Or perhaps they could stay here in Aleppo until the spring. Each day they separated after breakfast to find work and returned to share an evening meal before collapsing in exhaustion, if the work had been particularly hard that day. Some days it was manual labor, loading and unloading merchandise from the many caravans traveling through the city. Other days they found work as scribes or accountants, as both of them had received an education in numeracy and in the written work. Niccolò knew his ecclesiastic knowledge could have given him paid work with the Franciscan monks, but both he and Yusuf decided it would be better if he kept his distance from the church. Perhaps he should have heeded his own advice, but the pull of the church was still too strong, especially on this particular day of Christ's birth. He thought one man among many at midnight mass would go unnoticed. For the most part, it was beautiful yet bittersweet, reminding him of all he had lost as he raised his voice in prayer and song. He watched as others joined a line to receive the sacrament of the Eucharist, the blood and body of Christ. Even though the priests were unfamiliar, he knew it would be a mortal sin to receive communion while he was excommunicated. And perhaps it was his lack of movement towards the line that first drew unwanted attention. Slipping out seemed the only rational course of action, and he wished he had told Yusuf where he was going instead of sneaking out while Yusuf slept. Niccolò made it beyond the doors to a dark alley between the houses, and with all his attention on the church behind him, he did not notice passing a man waiting in the shadows. "Niccolò," came a well-remembered voice right behind him. Niccolò turned as the man stepped out.
"Brother Francesco," he breathed out in fear, the momentary shock giving Francesco enough time to stab a dagger right through his heart. And he died with Francesco's insane eyes as his last sight.
When he came back, he was naked and tied to a table, and the bloodied dagger was lying on another table placed nearby. The room was empty except for Brother Francesco. "I had wondered when our paths would cross again."
"Not if, but when," he emphasized. "For you and I were destined to find one another."
He ran a hand down Niccolò's leg from hip to knee and sighed raggedly.
"Even gaunt from hunger, you were still beautiful, my Niccolò. And now you are so much more."
"Please let me go, Francesco. I have never harmed you, nor wished harm upon you."
"No, you have filled my heart and mind with sin, barring me for heaven, letting me gaze upon you day after day, worshipping you, desiring you, and yet giving me nothing in return. You have laid waste to my vows of celibacy by tempting me with lust-filled thoughts."
"Your thoughts are your own. I have done nothing to encourage them."
"Nothing, he says," Francesco scoffed,
the backs of his knuckles brushing over Niccolò's groin just like they had when he was tied naked outside the Holy Sepulchre.
"Nothing, when there is this, a feast laid out before starving eyes."
Niccolò could see a manic darkness in him.
"I made a mistake before, denouncing you as a demon. They took you from me. But this time you are mine. Mine. And if the punishment for having you is eternal damnation, then so be it."
"You're insane."
Niccolò turned his head as Francesco tried to claim his mouth in some obscene attempt at a kiss, only to have strong fingers clasp his jaw in a brutal, bruising grip, pulling him back. The door slammed open before Francesco could follow through, head whipping round to the new threat, only for Niccolò to sob in relief when he saw Yusuf standing there, dagger in hand, dark eyes burning. Francesco snatched up the bloody dagger from the table and took a fighting stance.
"He doesn't belong to you or your pope," Yusuf stated softly, smiling grimly as he blocked the sudden thrust of the dagger towards him. "You gave up that right when your people tortured him.
They circled each other in the small room, each feinting and blocking, looking for an opening, evenly matched when there was so little room to maneuver. Yusuf hissed as another wild thrust sliced across his biceps, the wound healing before Francesco's widening eyes.
"Demon," he snarled,
dagger cutting the air as Yusuf jerked back out of range to avoid having his throat sliced open.
"Demon, huh?" Yusuf admonished, tutting. "Did you ever stop to consider he's an angel?"
Francesco sent a shocked glance toward Niccolo, likely as Yusuf intended. Yusuf launched forward and they grappled, Francesco's insanity and fanaticism giving him an edge for only a moment before Yusuf sank his dagger deep into the other man's breast.
"You better start praying fast to your God for forgiveness," Yusuf added, eyes as cold as Niccolo recalled from the days when they had fought each other.
Yusuf twisted the dagger before wrenching it free. Francesco dropped dead at Yusuf's feet, and Yusuf barely spared him a glance before he was using the same dagger to cut the rope binding Niccolo to the table. He helped Niccolo up onto unsteady feet, pulling the cloak off Francesco's body for Niccolo to wrap around himself. A glint of metal at Francesco's throat caught Niccolo's attention, and he leaned over to uncover a small gold cross, recognizing it immediately. It was Niccolo's cross, stolen from him in Jerusalem. He tore it free and followed Yusuf.
"Yusuf,
you can thank me later, for now we must leave before the body is discovered." Niccolo forced himself into silence as they returned to their small room and packed their belongings. Less than an hour later, they were passing through the city gates and heading north once more. Yusuf kept up a punishing pace, but Niccolo understood the need to put as much distance between them and the city as possible. So they rode for the remainder of the night, stopping only for prayers at dawn. Whenever Niccolo looked across at his companion, he saw only a grim expression, and this remained true for the next 2 days, until Yusuf decided they were not being pursued. As they sat on opposite sides of the fire, with cloaks drawn close to ward off the cold of the night, Yusuf sighed heavily.
"We should avoid Antep. Your people captured the city last year. If we're still riding to meet the two women, then we should skirt the city and keep heading north."
Niccolo nodded, letting the silence fall before whispering,
"I'm sorry."
"Hmm?"
"I should not have gone to mass."
Yusuf waved his words away. "It was a special day for your people, and you could not expect to be recognized so far from Al-Quds. My only regret is that you did not tell me you were going, so I was not there to protect you sooner."
Yusuf remained silent for a moment before speaking softly. "I could see his intentions toward you. He was obsessed with me."
Niccolo took a deep breath and sighed this time.
"You asked why I became a priest."
He saw Yusuf raise one eyebrow.
"It was because I was a second son and a shame to my father."
"What shame?"
Niccolo ducked his head. I had lustful thoughts."
"Ha! All boys have lustful thoughts."
"Of men,"
Niccolo added quietly.
"Oh, I see." He went quiet, staring into the flickering flames of the fire for a long time before asking, "So have you acted on these lustful thoughts?"
"What?
No. I became a priest and took a vow of celibacy."
"So you've never kissed another man?"
It was more a statement than a question, but Niccolo shook his head anyway.
"Never touched another man intimately?"
He shook his head vigorously this time.
"No."
"Has another man touched you this way, other than the crazy priest back in Aleppo?"
Niccolo snorted and shook his head again. "No. And he barely had time to touch me."
"So you do not know if it is a good thing or a bad thing?"
Confused, Niccolo glanced across the fire at Yusuf. "How can it be good?"
Yusuf looked surprised at first, but then his smile became a little sly.
"Why don't you come over here
and I will show you how good it can be.
Niccolo blinked. I took a vow.
Yes, but you are no longer a priest.
And such a vow lasts only to death,
he shrugged.
And you have died many times now.
Niccolo could not deny the logic of Yusuf's words.
His vow of celibacy had been made unto death, and he had died on the northern wall of Jerusalem by this man's hand. The fact he had not stayed dead was immaterial. He had honored his vow. He recalled the words of Father Euphrasio, telling him it did not matter if he was a priest or not, for the church might frown on acts of intimacy between two men, but it did not condemn it as a sin. It tolerated it, though perhaps not for much longer. Certain monastic factions of the church were demanding celibacy from all priests, and their voice was growing ever stronger. So the true source of his hesitation now was not his vow of celibacy or the priesthood. He was a second son whose usefulness ended if the firstborn son survived to produce offspring to inherit the family fortunes. Matteo had a wife who had been heavy with child when Niccolo left Genoa all those years ago, and the last news he received of his brother and his family had them all in good health. As a second son, he would have been expected to make his own way in the world unless his family was willing to support him. Many were not in such an enviable position as he, with such a loving brother. They would have to choose either the military or the church. No. His hesitation was the remembrance of his father's brutal words and severe punishments, of the condemnation and the sharp snap of a switch across his clothed back, maximum pain with minimal damage. Yet he was worth nothing to his father now, a second son with no purpose left to serve. His vow of celibacy unto death was fulfilled, his priesthood taken from him, and he had no noble family name to uphold. He was simply a man, Niccolo di Genova. Fear made his feet feel as heavy as lead as he stood up and walked the few paces to the other side of the fire, lowering himself down beside Yusuf. He watched as Yusuf turned to face him, clenching his fists to his sides as Yusuf reached out to push back the hood of the cloak. One hand lifted to Niccolo's face, thumb lightly smoothing over his stubble roughened cheek before brushing over the corner of his mouth. His lips tingled from the light touch, the sensation feathering down through his chest and belly. A single fingertip caressed the mole to the side of his mouth as Yusuf leaned in and let his lips barely brush across Niccolo's. The touch was like a bolt of lightning, and yet it still wasn't enough. His whole body wanted more, and he surged forward, chasing Yusuf's lips. Yusuf chuckled softly as he caught Niccolo's face in his hands, holding him tenderly, as he leaned back in to taste Niccolo's lips this time, tongue darting out to swipe across them, sending more frissons of pleasure racing through Niccolo's body to his groin. It was too little and too much, so wrong and yet so right, leaving him shaking as Yusuf's hands caressed his face and neck, hushing and soothing him like he was a small, frightened child. I'm sorry, I...
Yusuf shushed him.
I wish we had a nice warm bed in a nice warm house. There is so much I want to show you. So much I want to see.
His hand burrowed beneath the cloak, pushing under the clothing until Niccolo could feel Yusuf's cool palm against his warm skin. He gasped as fingertips brushed over a nipple, exhaling forcefully, breath captured as Yusuf claimed his mouth again. Yusuf pushed Niccolo's clothing aside, letting the cold night air bring goosebumps to his exposed skin, and Niccolo shivered, as much from the cold as from desire. Yusuf sucked on his lips before moving lower, tracing a path of fire down his chin to his throat, sucking hard on his Adam's apple before moving lower still, to the hollow where neck met torso. Niccolo's fingers gouged into the ground, body arching upwards to meet the tantalizing press of warm lips on his cool flesh, dragging in a breath as Yusuf continued his path down, diverting only once to stripe his tongue across a nipple before capturing it. The tiny flicks of tongue as he sucked had Nicola whimpering, fist shoved into his mouth to stifle his cries. Yusuf pulled back and shook his head, grasping Nicola's hand and pulling it away, lacing his fingers through Nicola's. "I want to hear you." He moved beyond the waist of Nicola's undergarment, mouthing the length of Nicola's erection through the modest layer of cloth from hilt to tip. Nicola moaned, legs sprawling open and hips canting, desperate for more, for harder. He cried out when Yusuf pulled away, hands scrabbling to grab hold of Yusuf and force him back. "So impatient, Habibi," he laughed softly, before pulling aside the undergarment. Nicola watched through hooded eyes as Yusuf stared at his hard erection, thumb and forefinger trailing the length from the base to his foreskin. He teased at the hood of flesh covering the head, drawing it down before leaning in and kissing it softly. "Beautiful. Like the rest of you," he murmured, before sinking his whole mouth over the head, fingers wrapped around the length. Nicola cried out, caught in sensations never experienced before, fingers sinking into Yusuf's curls, grasping tightly and sobbing when Yusuf pulled all the way off with a grunt of pain and grabbed Nicola's hands, lacing their fingers. He forced both hands to the ground to either side of Nicola's hips, pushing his full weight down on them as he dipped his head to swallow Nicola's cock once more, tongue rubbing in just the right place. And all Nicola could do was throw back his head and cry out, as every nerve ending ignited, and he was caught in a powerful wave of pure pleasure. As he lay limp and shattered, he could feel Yusuf's hand moving rapidly, until Nicola heard a soft gasp and felt the splash of liquid heat across his cold thighs, groin, and belly. Yusuf crawled up his body, weighed off to one side until he was plastered against Nicola. One gentle hand cradled Nicolo's cheek and jaw, warm lips claiming his still gasping mouth, tongue licking inside leisurely until his mouth slid away. Yusuf rested against Nicolo's cheek, chaste kisses punctuating his hot breaths until the coldness of the night made them both shiver. Nicola sighed as Yusuf pulled the cloak around them, both too wrung out to consider fetching water to clean up. Instead, he felt Yusuf's arm wrap around his waist possessively, his beard tickling Nicolo's neck and shoulder as Yusuf buried his face against him. Between one breath and the next, Nicola fell asleep. Some years later, "You pulled out my hair," Yusuf loved to tease Nicola over their first time, of how he had lasted barely a few minutes under Yusuf's mouth and tongue, and how he had ripped out Yusuf's hair in the process. "I had no experience of the power of love. I was overcome by passion." Yusuf laughed. Fortunately, their healing ability had seen to his sore scalp quickly, and his hair had grown back unnaturally fast until it was of a certain length, then slowed back to a normal growth rate. He grinned at Nicola. "You are a very dangerous man to make love to. You also broke my nose."
"You took me by surprise."
"I was between your legs, fucking you, hardly a surprise." Yusuf chuckled as he recalled the way Nicola had reared up when Yusuf hit that spot for the first time, forehead smacking hard into Yusuf's nose. It had gushed blood before snapping back into place, the sudden shock of pain tipping him over the edge with Nicola. Despite all this, Yusuf would not change a single moment, nor would he change Nicola for a more experienced lover. These first times were memories he hoped to cherish for as long as they lived. Certainly their mishaps made them far more memorable, but this was not all he loved about Nicola. He loved the way Nicola's body reacted to his every touch, every time, the way Nicola fitted him perfectly when he rode Yusuf's cock and molded against his own body when they slept. If he lived to be 1,000 years old, he would never tire of this man's kisses, of his soft gasps and sweet cries of pleasure. He loved Nicola's wicked tongue, and how quickly he had learned how to reduce Yusuf to a quivering wreck. But their sexual intimacy was just one facet of their relationship. He had found a mind as quick as his own, a man who would listen raptly to his poems, snort at his terrible jokes, laugh and cry with him at both their good luck and their misfortunes. Yusuf would fight by his side, and he would fight to protect him against any and all odds, and he knew Niccolo would do the same for him with equal passion. Niccolo made him feel whole. He laughed again as Niccolo sighed heavily in exasperation. He loved the flush that pinked Niccolo's cheeks when he teased his friend and lover, and they were most definitely this now. Yusuf quieted as they approached the village, not wanting to be overheard in case the people here took offense at two men sharing their bodies along with their blankets. The old gnarled tree standing at the center of the village looked vaguely familiar, and it took a moment before Yusuf recalled why. He had seen it in his dreams of the two warrior women. They were here, or they had been here, not so long ago. When he looked to Niccolo, he saw Niccolo's beautiful liquid eyes staring back at him with the same recognition and concern. Niccolo jerked his head towards the only inn, and Yusuf saw what had caught his sharp eyes, two horses, identical to the ones on which he had seen the women ride in his dreams. They were still here, and now he and Niccolo had a choice to make. They could turn back and find a defensible place to meet the two women outside of the village, or they could confront them now in the hope a crowd of villagers would dissuade them from any violence if their intent was hostile. Perhaps give them time to persuade these two women that they mean them no harm and want only to talk. Yusuf opened his mouth to say as much, but Niccolo turned away abruptly, bringing Yusuf's attention to the two women of their dreams standing only a few feet behind them. The taller one stared at them with open interest, her body held loose and yet ready to spring into action at the slightest wrong move. He could see the battle axe strapped to her back and knew from his dreams how good she was at using it. The smaller woman, with long dark hair, took a step forward and smiled brightly. "It is a pleasure to finally meet you, little brothers." End.